Oh, yeah. Hey, everybody. Whether you ride a bike, a bronc, or a skateboard, Wrangler jeans are for you. I love Wrangler. Oh, my God. It's a Wrangler jeans ad read. Classic or modern styles, a range of fits, all price points, vintage re-releases. Wrangler has something for everyone. Visit Wrangler.com and check out their selection of jeans, shirts, and outerwear for men and women. New styles, great fits. Wrangler, real comfortable jeans. Mark, you need more clothes. Wrangler.
Bring it on.
Big toss. Dalton to his right end zone. Touchdown, A.J. Green. Here's a blitz pass. He's caught. Good catch. A.J. Green. Foot race. His second of the game. Touchdown, Bengals. Flacco hit as he let it go. And up for grabs and picked.
34-23, the Bengals over the Ravens to kick off week two. This is Greg Rosenthal alongside Chris Wesseling, Dan Hansis, and Mark Sessler will be with us a little later to preview the week two games. But Chris, we are here to talk a little TNF once again. I forgot how to do this, but I know this was a tough night for you, testing your professionalism to write nice things about the Cincinnati Bengals, the undefeated Cincinnati Bengals on NFL.com.
That's one way to put it. I would say in my defense, I've been pretty complimentary about the Bengals throughout the offseason and certainly about Joe Mixon the first 2 weeks.
That's true. And Mixon made a difference in this game. Even though the numbers didn't show it, 21 carries, 84 yards. When he came back into the game, he was on and off the field because of injuries. When he came back in the fourth quarter, when they absolutely needed a drive, he was kind of the key guy to kill the clock, move the ball, and they got a field goal that held off the Ravens. The Bengals were up 28-7. They almost blew it. Did you think they were going to blow it? And what were your big takeaways?
I absolutely thought they would blow it because I've seen this, you know, for 25, 30, 35 years. The Bengals always blow leads. This time, they did a good job of keeping the lead, and I think this is one of the most improved offenses in the league, and the defense has improved too. Even without Vontaze Burfict out there, this defense is better than it's been.
You think they're going to go 16-0?
No, I don't. I don't think they have it in them. But it would be fun to see them go 16-0 and then lose in the second round of the playoffs.
That would be Marvin Lewis really stepping up. They are a different team, though, don't you think? Tyler Boyd is really becoming a solid number two to A.J. Green. Green had three touchdowns in this game. He could have had three last week.
Andy Dalton will find open receivers if you give him time. And this offensive line kept him sack-free against a defense that dominated the Bills last week.
Yeah, the coaching changes for this team have been a little under the radar. So Frank Pollock is their offensive
former line. Former Cowboys offensive line coach.
And they look like a different offensive line. They look like a solid offensive line.
Bill Lazor has had all offseason to implement his playbook. He sort of got thrust into that in the middle of September last year.
I was thinking back to, I believe it was week two, a year ago, I was in this studio talking about Bengals-Texans, and that was a terrible game to watch, the Bengals offense. And comparing that Bengals offense to this one, I think they have some staying power. I know it was a Thursday night game on the road, but they pushed around the Ravens defensive line a little bit.
I don't know if the Bengals are ready yet to challenge the Jaguars and the Patriots, but they look like a playoff team to me, and I hope we get west of us again this year.
I think we are. I think the annual tradition, Erica, do you know what west of us is? Our producer, the loose cannon, is behind the glass with us this
hey guys.
Thursday night. Do you know what west of us is?
It's like the celebration of Wes.
No.
Well, sort of, in an offhand kind of way.
Yeah.
I created this about, what, 7 years ago? It was the annual, like,
sounds about right.
Saturday afternoon in January, the first round of the playoffs, when the Bengals lose every year.
So that's his favorite day of the year.
My favorite
holiday. He celebrates
holiday.
The Bengals losing, and we haven't been able to do it the last couple of years. I'm with you. I think at least two teams are getting into the playoffs from the AFC North. I predicted the Ravens and Bengals before the years would be those two. We'll see. It's a long way to go. I think if you're a Ravens fan, I wouldn't freak out. I don't think any differently about this team after this game. The defense wasn't great. But actually, as bad as Joe Flacco looked in the first quarter of this game, the difference between this year's Joe Flacco and last year's Joe Flacco is at least he can do enough to rebound after a terrible start and put up some garbage stats and make it interesting. That last year's Joe Flacco wasn't doing that.
Yeah, he almost went for 400 yards. And a lot of that is because his receivers are better. John Brown dropped a touchdown but made some big plays in this game. I think they really missed C.J. Mosley, who went out with a bone bruise early in the game, and the middle of the field was wide open for the Bengals for most of the game. And the other thing that would worry me if I'm a Ravens fan, I'm probably making too much of this, but Eric Weddle is 33 years old. He's played 170 games at one of the hardest hitting positions on the field, and I hope he took a bad angle on the second A.J. Green touchdown because he looked awfully slow on that play.
He did not look great tonight. Geno Atkins might have been the best player on the field. Two tackles for loss, four quarterback hits, two sacks. But the Ravens aren't going to win any games where they have no sacks, no turnovers. Andy Dalton in primetime was basically mistake-free throwing to A.J. Green. And I just want to read a tweet that the Loose Cannon said, and I want to see if she can explain it to me. She wrote, A.J. Green is like that ex that you ignored their calls a little too long in case someone else called but then shows up to the dance with Tom Brady. Catch my drift?
What is your drift?
Okay, no. So listen.
Make it quick, too.
Okay, make it quick. AJ Green, people last season were sort of like, yeah, he's okay, he's good, you know, whatever, blah, blah. They're kind of eh about him. And then tonight, he, like, busted through the gate the first half, and everyone was like, AJ Green, oh, my God, heart eyes emoji, so like, AJ Green.
So he's the popular kid now.
But he was the one that we were all sort of like, I'm not going to pick up the phone for him calling because I'm going to see what else is out there. But then he shows you up by – you know, bringing Tom Brady to the dance. That was just me throwing in Tom Brady. But otherwise, like, bringing the hottie to the dance when you didn't
call
back.
Anyone that was ever questioning A.J. Green too hard doesn't know what they were talking about.
That's true.
This guy's a Hall of Famer. And then finally, before we throw it to Dan, I want to hear a voice of another Hall of Famer in my eyes.
But Andy, you've been playing with your hair on fire, basically.
Well, it was a good way
but
to...
But I'm cheating.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
I see what you did there. Andy Dalton, 2018. That was a great reaction to our friend Colleen Wolf. Congratulations.
Colleen, hanging out in my hometown.
First night hosting the pregame, the halftime, the postgame of Thursday Night Football. They grow up so fast.
She did an awesome job as predicted.
She was incredible. Congratulations to Colleen. And let's throw it over to Dan and talk a little bit more about the Week 2 slate.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Hosts up Jays in the backyard.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, and I am joined in a room filled with heroes Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I like that idea, actually. Just have listeners start sending high-quality clothing to my desk at work, and I'll start wearing it.
You heard it, people.
Hit me up, and I'll give you my sizes before you purchase.
At the top of the show, you heard Wes and Greg, the scientists, break down the Ravens and Bengals tilt on Thursday night, and our job today on the late Thursday, early Friday edition of our pod is to break down each of the Week 2 games. We were, you know, of course, in London last week. We get back Monday, highly jet-lagged. I actually slept to almost 6 a.m. This morning, so I feel like I'm really heading in the right direction now in full recovery. But no one said – that was part of the deal of going to London. It was like, no one cares about you. You're going on your little fancy boy trip, and when you come back, you're going to be dropped into, you know, the Viet Cong 1971. And that's where we are right now.
But you can just, like, whine about it at the top of the podcast. At least that helps.
Yeah, I'm not whining. I'm just saying this is reality.
I think our job is to try to recapture some of the energy that was going back and forth between Wes and the Loose Cannon behind the glass before the show started, because that was something special. I've never seen Wes scream at someone like that.
Yeah.
Oh, there was no screaming.
Oh, please.
Erica, your thoughts on what happened before the show, the incident?
I think Greg's just jealous that since London, Wes and I have a much deeper bond.
We're tight.
Greg?
There's something to that.
Okay. Well,
by the way, Dan, I wonder if Vietnam vets might disagree with your opening analysis there. That was a little bit more harrowed than wandering around a carpeted corporate building talking about a sport.
Well, you know, I love this country and, of course, all the veterans, the true heroes of this country. But one thing they don't know is what it's like to go on a work trip to England and
that's
then
true.
Come back and have to record three podcasts and go to multiple meetings.
I'm losing it.
Wes is right on the edge.
It's week two. Wes.
I'm on the precipice.
Wes had a borderline meltdown when his Slack wasn't opening, and then he found out that we had to do a video hit What was it? What did you say? There's not enough hours in the day? That's what a crazy person says when they lose it. There's not enough hours. I need more hours day. I need more clock.
You also made fun of Erica's upbringing for not knowing what apple juice looks like compared to other
Well, that's after she accused me of drinking urine.
Well, yeah.
But wait, have you ever met a human in their 20s that doesn't know what apple juice looks like?
That did not look like normal apple juice.
It's a fair critique, Wes. I'm with you.
Thank you.
It looked exactly like apple juice.
No, it didn't.
Actually, there was a label on it that said apple juice.
Well, I did not see the label.
That was drinking
a LaCroix with a straw.
Erica, the context clues were everywhere. So,
I'm going to keep my cool right now. But don't ever come at me about LaCroix or how I ingest
it. With a straw?
Daddy likes his straws. All right.
Here's what happened.
Yes.
I get through chemo. I skate through the off season, the easiest off season I've ever had.
Yeah.
And then they helicopter me into week two.
Yeah.
And by the way, you have 8 new jobs. Here, deal with them. And I'm like, well, when did all these jobs get on my plate?
You know what we're going to get soon?
Go ahead, Mark.
Russ playing that other little fiddle song he likes to play. It went quiet.
Do we have
for
the fiddle?
A couple of years, but it got a little bit louder
it's
now.
Coming back.
It's that little war cry for that little salary increase.
Oh,
that
it's coming.
That fiddle song starts to just get a little bit louder.
It's coming. I'm underpaid, and I'm not going to take it. We're going to start getting some raises around here. How many jobs do you want a man to do?
We're all going to get fired. Okay, so we're going to go through each of the – I agree, by the way, Wes. I would like more money, too. But you know what? We're pretty damn lucky, too, aren't we, Greg?
Hey, it's football season.
We're here to talk football, and we're going to go through each of the games. I was going to say half the league is 0-1, but Mark's Browns, oh, we just can't pull this off. It's too hard to kick a field goal.
Wait a minute.
They ruined everything, so now there's a tie attached to two
Hold
teams
on,
for the rest
pause.
Of the season.
Hold on, pause. Two items. Number one, I like how you don't blame the Steelers for that. Secondly, in a preseason episode, I predicted the Steelers would have 9.5 wins, so –
Ooh.
Let's see how that turns out.
That's looking good.
Might have exactly.
Do we call ties half wins now? Is that the is
I
that
would give it to
designation?
You.
That's exactly what a tie would be in the standings, 0.5.
Yeah, you would get that.
Okay. We're going to go through
someone
every game.
Someone's sane around here. Thank you, Wes.
I don't know if he's the guy to
call
get
me sane.
All right. So let's get going. Let's start in the NFC South, a great rivalry. The Carolina Panthers, 1-0, they kind of bullied the Cowboys a bit. Not a great showing offensively by the Panthers, but what they did do was beat up on the Cowboys' offensive line, on Dak Prescott, didn't let Zeke Elliott get loose, so really on balance, a nice start in the first game with David Tepper at ownership and with the big Panthers logo on the center of the field. Who cares? I keep talking about the logo in the center of the field. I don't know why that keeps on connecting in my brain. But
it's
now
a big
they're going
deal in Carolina. They were talking about it all offseason.
Okay, so maybe I was just I didn't even realize I was tapping into that entire.
They have
region.
Bigger concerns right now.
They head now to Atlanta to face the Falcons, and this, you know, these are not must-win games, Mark Sessler, in week two. But you know what? That was such a bad showing by the Falcons, especially on offense against the Eagles. That you really want to see them do something and really take care of business at home in their home opener. Big game for them.
Yeah, man, because we, you know, you and I picked the Falcons
say,
to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, man.
I did.
I've
I'm never, a little annoyed
I've
at
never
this
heard
game.
Mark say man.
Is this
life.
The new Mark?
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man. Like, it was awesome, bro.
Well, I'm just playing off of the lexicon you were throwing at us before the show where you're trying to be like a man from, like, Queens, 1978, like Son of Summer, Son of Sam Summer. Like, I'm
like
just
back
talking,
when we, back
talking
when we
a little
ball. Players.
All right. Okay.
Let's, please.
Let's get on track here.
Anyways, one of the most tiring narratives all this offseason and last offseason, because they got pounded into like 42 dead horses, with Steve Sarkisian. How will he adjust the offense? What will happen? It's like, here is the problem, though. Nothing is more depressing than me when you watch a team come out the way they did, the Falcons against the Eagles, and have the same identical problems that they had on offense a year ago. And this is a team that, since Steve Sarkisian has showed up, has ranked 29th in red zone scoring percentage. So it's not just words, it's real. And you look at the Falcons losing games, the playoff game last year, the game this year, where you with the red zone offense were completely different. They're a different team. We're talking about them differently. They might have been the Super Bowl winner and slayed those ghosts from two seasons ago. How the heck did they get out of this situation?
This is like the Battle of Chancellorsville. Who's left on these rosters? It's week two. And the Panthers and Falcons are the two most injured teams in the league.
What battle was that again?
It's a Civil War battle, the Battle of Chancellorsville.
I knew it. It was bloody.
Those veterans bloody also have fair no idea what it's like to be on a podcast.
Big win for the Union.
Well, yeah. And Dan's a Patriot.
They definitely don't know what podcasts are. It's been a while.
That's true.
Yeah, Greg Olsen's gone. Trey Turner, who was one of their lone surviving offensive tackles, has a concussion. And then Devonta Freeman's not practicing this week for the Falcons. Jones and Neal are out. Who's left?
God forbid, Greg, that the injuries is a big part of this. But to Mark's point, God forbid the Falcons start sputtering in the red zone again and they have another game like they had in week one, tying back to the playoffs, because then that's all anybody's going to talk about. They need to score points and a lot of them on Sunday.
This is such a great opportunity for the Panthers. Ron Rivera, even though they lost all those players to injury, I think loved the way that his team came out, and they could perhaps bully the Falcons up front with that defensive line, which did look incredible. And we just came from a meeting for this Twitter show that we're going to be starting on Tuesday. And one of the segments that the shadowy league figures aren't too sure about that was broached as an idea was, this is not gambling advice, but that's basically the segment. And for, you know, maybe we could try it out here a little bit. It's like, this is not gambling advice, but I'm a little shocked that the Falcons are huge favorites in this game, because this is one of those games, you're right, Dan, that they have to just find any way that they can to escape with a victory. And I'm not so sure up front on either side of the ball that they have the advantage.
I kind of see where the desert people are coming from, in the sense that Thursday night opener is weird to start with, and you're playing the Eagles and the crowd and the banners going up. I wouldn't put too much into one game, a week one game on a Thursday night. But they're not going to be favorites much longer if we keep seeing the way they look.
Well,
on,
did they not account for what the Panthers did last Sunday when they make this desert?
No, it's all accounted for. I think it's the injuries, especially on Carolina. But keep an eye on Ian Thomas, who really impressed the Panthers, had earned a role on that team as a rookie tight end, which you don't really see. He was already splitting snaps with Greg Olsen, and he just is a physical beast who I think, if you're in fantasy leagues, might be a guy that gets a lot of targets, because they are just not healthy in Carolina at all. And I think Cam Newton loves throwing to tight ends. North Turner loves tight ends. I could see this rookie being a pretty big factor.
Pick this game. I'm just out of curiosity.
Panthers.
Wes.
Falcons.
Falcons. Yeah, I'm taking the Falcons.
Okay, so let's see what happens. Moving on, the Los Angeles Chargers laid a stinking egg in week one against the Chiefs. Now they travel to Western New York to face the Bills, and no one laid a bigger egg in week one than the Buffalo Bills, 47-3 loss. And Sean McDermott, although he says he'll take it to the grave that it was the right decision to start Nate Peterman in week one, well, despite that strong
I hope he's not thinking about that when he's, you know, on his
deathbed. You know, these guys are nuts. He probably,
you know what I
be.
Mean? Like, I hope he's thinking about his family. And
he has made the move now to bench Peterman. Josh Allen, this is now your team. You get a Chargers team, Chris Wessling, that will once again be without Joey Bosa, who is out indefinitely, and that does not sound good, what's going on with his foot. So any chance that the Bills shake off what was just a horrendous showing in week one against maybe a vulnerable Chargers team?
I feel like I've been saying for 5 years, never underestimate the Bills at home, but I think it's safe to underestimate the Bills at home.
Mm.
Speaking of strong convictions, when we did the hot seat bracket, my strong convictions was that we were giving Sean McDermott way too much credit, because this could be a like 1-15 type of season. And it certainly looks like that to me. That quote that you said was just plain weird about Peterman. I'll take it to the grave. That's just
let's
weird.
Actually, let's hear the exact quote from Coach McDermott.
Do you feel you misjudged the quarterback position heading into the season?
No.
Why not? Certainly looks that way from where we sit.
Well, listen, I felt like it was just like this. I feel like it's the right move. I feel like that was the right move. I'll take that to my grave. That's how I felt about it. I'm always going to try and make the right move for our football team. Sometimes it's going to work out. Sometimes it's not. And I stand by it as a leader. I stand by those, both the ones that work out and the ones that don't.
And then the fact that Zay Jones' mom is telling people that Zay had to tell Kelvin Benjamin where to line up. This happened in the preseason. Bills receivers didn't know where to line up. What is going on with this coaching staff?
And when when your mom is talking trash on the other receivers and you're answering questions about that, that feels like a team. It's like one of those week 16, 17 stories of a team falling apart. but this is week two. And as much as the Chargers charged last week, they did have 540 yards, and they did give up a ton of points on special teams, which is kind of what they do.
Yeah.
But if they can just not make massive mistakes, not give away points in special teams, not drop all of Phillip Rivers' beautiful deep balls, I mean, they should make some hay. Well,
part of Chargers charging
is... about Phillip Rivers' beautiful deep balls?
He's just beautiful deep balls, you know, nice and down the field and looking
perfect. You look at the family tree, I buy into it.
He delivers it in a funny fashion, too.
Yeah.
I just think Chargers charging has a lot to do with the fact that Phillip Rivers will throw for 500 yards, then throw the killer pick, then the missed field goal will come, then everyone, you know, half the stadium is rooting for the other team and everything crumbles. But, I mean, Wes, I think part of the reason that McDermott probably didn't rank as high as he should have on the hot seat is that they've had five head coaches under this ownership in 5 years, if you want
Soon
to count
to be
the
six.
Interim.
And the GM,
I'm just saying,
the GM and the coach are
and
aligned,
tight.
And it's literally the first full year with that GM.
But the GM might be gone, too. This is shaping up to be an awful season.
I think ownership would live with that because they essentially telegraphed that they are taking a step back. And I do think we should at least give McDermott some credit that they always stepped up. I mean, we counted them out a million different times last year, and whenever they were kind of at their worst, they would play a good game. I don't think this is some walk in the park for the Chargers. It would not surprise me.
Yeah,
just
but you think every single NFL game is not a walk in the park.
Well, that's true, though. It's by far the most...
Greg is the greatest
There's never a huge favorite in Greg's mind.
But that's how the NFL plays out. That's why there aren't huge favorites in the NFL, because
there are huge favorites.
There statistically that... Anything can happen on any week, especially at
Thank
a home game.
Thank you for that.
Right, but no week in the season, no week in the season like flip-flops everything we assumed for
right.
7 days like week two.
That's fair.
Because we haven't seen football all season. So, like, oh, but now we have all this new information.
Right.
And then we have all counter-information Sunday night.
And if you think the Chargers, and you know the Chargers, number one, Mark Sessler, in the pain rankings, they're going to travel 3,000 miles
Crocker
and you're going to lock them in for a guaranteed victory? Show me something, L.A. Chargers.
So I'm allowed to lock this game up?
They are the biggest favorites.
You know the rule.
They are the biggest.
Can you look in the mirror?
You guys just told me that this was like an even game.
You tell me. Can you look in the mirror?
I think anyone can lock up anything.
You guys, say this is like a 50-50 shot.
I would be disappointed if you did.
No one said that. I don't care. You can lock up whatever you want, whatever makes your heart content.
That wouldn't make my heart content.
Let's move on. The Minnesota Vikings got their season off to a nice start against the 49ers, a real nice start, in fact. I thought they were one of the more impressive teams in week one. They now travel to Lambeau to face the Packers. The question is, Greg Rosenthal, will it be the Packers with Deshaun Kizer quarterback or with Aaron Rodgers? It's very much up in the air.
I was worried that the news that Ian Rappaport, our NFL Network insider, broke right as we were coming up here, that the Packers might not know Rodgers' status till Saturday at the earliest, which makes it sound like either he's probably not playing or at the very least they're just drawing this out as long as possible to keep the Vikings not knowing. Because if they don't know until Saturday at the earliest, my guess would be he's not really going to be participating in practice much, if at all, on Friday. And he hasn't yet. And it's strange because he finished out that game last week. And generally with a great player like that, if you finish out the game before, you're probably going to play the next week. But they also have to think of the long game here. It was great that he had that performance, but it is a long season. And they're not going to do anything to jeopardize Aaron Rodgers. And that would basically end this game before it started if he doesn't play.
Most likely. I don't think Kizer is ready to handle this Vikings pass rush.
I did like
anything about
that Kizer gave a really good, supposedly inspirational speech in the halftime locker room last week, but then he came out and then he didn't play because they thought he was playing and he got
it. Well, it did enough to get Aaron Rodgers
right.
back on the
Randall
field,
Cobb, so. Like said, it fired everyone up and then they got out there and was like, oh, actually, Aaron's going to come back.
Why is it that we haven't heard any details on this knee injury?
Well, essentially, it's a sprain. I mean, I think that's what Rodgers said, right? So that's a detail, isn't it? And that if you want to have him play through a knee sprain, we'll see.
Yeah, he was dragging that leg around. It would not surprise me if he doesn't play.
That was my thought watching that game. Obviously, the adrenaline is pumping, and they're on this comeback, and Al, Chris, and Michelle are watching the game. Or as the Loose Cannon said before the show, it was Al. What was it?
Al and Jake?
Al and Jake.
I don't know.
Al and Jake are the best on TV.
Okay, Loose Cannon, Erica Tamposi, is very upfront that she's not a huge NFL fan. She's a huge Patriots fan. And that's fine. There's no problem. I have no issue with
very
that.
Very similar to a lot of Patriots families.
But it does trickle out. Sometimes you get these little fun little La Raville Magnificos, like when she says, oh, yeah, it was on Sunday. Al and Jake made the call. Jake Collinsworth.
Jake.
Love you, Loose Cannon.
This should be like the best matchup, just about a divisional matchup in the NFL right now.
If Rodgers plays.
That's what I'm saying.
Please play on Rodgers.
It's annoying because the Vikings defense looks potentially even better. That's how good Sheldon Richardson looked, adding him to that mix.
Yeah, where was that Sheldon Richardson last year?
That's what Seattle's wondering. Well, he didn't have Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter.
I refuse to speak during this game segment.
Why? What's up?
I don't know.
Oh, you just have an issue with it?
I just got a few minutes in. I thought I'm just going to – yeah. Now I'm speaking, so I totally – did not.
You low key do not like the Packers.
No, actually, you know what? Watching what happened against the Bears, despite them being the team of ATL, that was pretty incredible. You'd have to be a walking corpse, which we almost were at that point in the night in London, to not enjoy that. I like Aaron Rodgers.
Wait a second.
Yeah. They've got your
you
boy
almost
Pat.
Made it through the whole preview.
Just get.
I did
it.
Not do it. I did not do it.
Okay, we're gonna move on then.
Please
unless
do.
You have.
Well, he was I was waiting for you to move on, but then
he was
just
getting
kept
into
going.
Some pretty great analysis.
No, you had something coming there?
No, I'll save it for week three.
The Cleveland Browns, Mark, now you're back in 0-0-1. Annoying. Head to the Superdome to face the New Orleans Saints. And this is a very interesting setup for a game, Mark, for your Brownies, because as frustrating as it was not to close out that game, that was a really positive step for the franchise to hang with the Steelers, to nearly beat them. And now they go to face the Saints. Last year, the Saints, you would have hated to face them from October on, and you could chalk it up as a loss. But after they get walloped and give 48 points to Ryan Fitzpatrick, all of a sudden, to quote your boy Kevin Garnett, Greg Rosenthal, anything is possible!
Yeah, I mean, the Saints team also has started 0-2 4 years in a row. They gave up 500 yards.
That's ridiculous.
Last year,
Drew Brees doing that.
Right, and last year in Week 1 and Week 2, they gave up 500 yards before they tightened up into the defense that we came to love down the stretch, I guess. I think it's a strange game.
Fell in love with that defense.
It's a strange game. I would wonder what you'd have more faith in, though, the Saints actually turning around this week on defense or Cleveland's offensive line. And I know you went back and watched this, too. That it wasn't just the fact that T.J. Watt turned into an absolute nightmare.
Well, after watching that game, Von Miller should have been Defensive Player of the Week, not T.J. Watt.
Well, I'm fine with that, but T.J. Watt did plenty to disrupt
the
Browns.
He did, and it wasn't just the offensive line. The Browns' running backs and tight ends got worked over. This was not just – I mean, Desmond Harrison, who – it was so weird hearing their sideline reporter, Melanie Collins. Hugh Jackson said that this guy is one of the –
Melko?
One of the most talented players on a team. Joe Thomas said – this guy can have a better career than me if he gets his nose in the playbook
and learns it. I heard all that too. It's week one. It was insane weather, but he had two bad holdings.
He gave up more hurries than any offensive lineman in the league.
They're a penalty ridden unit that, like, I think they set them back last week big time. And do you get off the? Can you fix that in a dome?
I don't understand. Hugh Jackson skated by on this whole plan that he had Joel Bitonio at left tackle all of the preseason,
was working,
and then he flipped it going into week one. Seemed very strange. I would be worried if I was a Browns fan that they played 89 snaps last week on offense, and that's a heavy workload out of nowhere, and now you have to go on the road and play again the next week.
A pissed-off Saints team.
Right. I think that's a tough matchup. That said, I think the Browns have enough defensive talent to at least give the Saints problems.
It's a way different defense than Cleveland's ever brought against the Saints before. The Breeze has lost to them twice, which means nothing. I get that's a long time ago, but he's never dealt with Myles Garrett on Cleveland's roster. A couple times when he came up against Big Ben, it was like the shadow of a front door swallowing up Big Ben. I'd never seen anyone on a Cleveland roster do that to Big Ben before.
And we talk about revenge games. Like, this is a real revenge game. I mean, Sean Payton and Greg Williams legitimately despise each other.
But isn't that true for most people and Sean Payton and Greg Williams?
It seems that way.
Can it start like your mailman? I'm like, I hate that man. So big game for the Browns. If the Browns hang
every week
with the Saints
game for them,
and they play well, and they again prove themselves to be, you know, a challenge for anybody, you're feeling good, win or loss here, as long as they're competitive. You know,
I'd agree.
Yeah,
I would not feel comfortable locking up this game.
I get that.
As
little Browns,
one of the teams is on a 17-game losing streak, so that would be.
Oh, you're
weird.
Saying
they're off to their best start in 14 years.
Oh, you're saying because the Saints are too heavy of a favorite. Well, or because you think the Browns
Saints
are going to win.
Saints are a much better team.
All right, let's move on.
We got to find out. For right now, they're in the mix of the one of the worst defenses of the league, and they have to prove that.
This could be a bad Saints year. They happen a lot.
The data at our disposal is not limited to week one. It also involves what they've done in their careers to date.
Right, and it's not. It's a lot of players who have played on a lot of bad defenses.
All right, let's move on. We head to the Meadowlands, where the Miami Dolphins, they played a seven-hour game in an electrical storm, and it was a whole mess. But they took care of business against the Tennessee Titans, 27-20 win. And now here come the Jets. And we talked about the Jets on Wednesday's show, and all of a sudden how there's hope has walked in the room, and Sam Darnold looked so great against the Lions, and that defense, and this is what we'll start with the Jets, Wes. The defense, to me, Todd Bowles has been there. This is his fourth year. But have we ever really seen the Jets have a identity on defense since he's been there? I would say no. But that defense against the Lions looked like a team with an identity, fast, aggressive, young, and that got you excited almost as much as Sam Darnold playing well.
Yeah, Jamal Adams especially. Love watching that guy play. I think the question is, are they that damn good, or was this a product of stealing signs? They knew what was coming from Matthew Stafford. They all talked about it after the game. That is a huge factor. So,
isn't that part of the game? I was trying to kind of decipher what that actually meant.
If it's part of the game, wouldn't you hear that every
week? Yeah, you don't hear teams say it. Yeah. That was unusual to hear a team say it right after that
one. And it's also something people have said about Jim Bob Cooter's offense before. My question to you, Dan – you obviously have a lot of feelings about the Jets, but people don't know. You kind of have some feelings about the Dolphins, too. You'll usually have a good read on them, and you like to, like, foil. You'd like to be a foil for Henry a little bit?
Well, I have a lot of animosity for the Dolphins. They're an old rival. They go back forever. I was at the fake Spike game in 94. And they've kind of been, they've kind of been on the same wavelength with the Jets forever now. Don't have anything.
So my question.
Yeah, what is your question?
The winner of this team is going to be 2-0.
Yes.
Would you think that the winner of this game is a legitimate wild card contender?
I absolutely think so. Before the season, I was in a mailbag I wrote, a Dolphins fan said, give me anything to be excited about. And I said, listen, look at the AFC. Look at what's going to happen once you get past the division winners. There might be a wild card team that's also very good, a 10 or 11 win team. But from the perspective of the summer, it felt like that sixth playoff spot is going to be wide open. We're talking maybe not 8-8 wide open, but a team that can win 9 games will get in the door. And I think the Dolphins are a team that is in that mix. And after you see the Jets in week one, at least, you're like, oh, the Jets can absolutely be in that mix. And yes, the team that starts 2-0 here, there's no reason to think that they won't be hanging around in December. It's very exciting.
Jets are a different team with Quincy Enunwa. Like, I love that guy. He adds a level of toughness. He got a huge percentage of the targets, the energy. Just they need guys like that. And between him, Crowell had a good game. Powell, like the field position, it was a pretty complete performance. Like it was all three phases. They did more at least to impress in week one than the Dolphins did, for what it's worth.
That said, the Dolphins are forever getting slashed on this podcast, and largely for good reason in years past. I did not think they looked that bad.
No, they didn't.
I take the last third of that game and almost throw it out the window because it was after all these
silly
days.
Game.
And it did truly turn silly. But the Dolphins, when they can run the ball, and you saw, I think that you were talking about Frank Gore all last Sunday on Sky Sports. He looked younger. He looked fresh. And when you can get like Kenny Stills playing the way he did, Tannehill to me, he is Ryan Tannehill, but he was not a disaster in that game outside of one terrible pick.
No, he didn't get a lot of attention coming back from his torn ACL, but he looked like Ryan Tannehill. And I am contractually obligated to mention Frank, the inconvenient truth, Gore, is 15 yards away from becoming the number 4 all-time leading rusher in NFL history. Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Barry Sanders, and Coral Gables High School's own Frank Gore setting that mark just miles away from where he grew up. You got to love that.
I feel like Greg is getting really paid well to say some of these things.
It's true, though. It's a great story for him. It's
a
great story for him.
He looked good.
Both of their running backs look good.
And, you know, are you kidding me? Of course I'm going to lock it up here.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go. The J-Men.
You can't take that.
Lock it up. 2-0, and we fly to Cleveland for Thursday night football at 2-0.
Wow.
That would be
to face the 0-1-1 Browns.
Wow, you
the 0-0-2 Browns.
That's a good chance. After that Thursday night, they can be number one in the entire NFL, 3-0.
What if Cleveland
that's
did not
ahead
go?
Ahead of everyone.
Cleveland does not go. They did not go 0-16.
Pinch me, Greg.
They do not go 16-0. They go 0-0-16.
That would be more amazing than winning the Super Bowl.
Oh, 0-16.
I honestly think that would be the most fascinating NFL season of all time.
Would you be the number one seed in the AFC?
Well, according to you, it's not a win. Mark didn't lock it up, so obviously it wouldn't be anything. Would they be the 32nd? What would they be?
0-0-16. No, they would have a chance. Yeah. They would, you know, unless 500.
But you would win a tiebreaker against, not an 8-8 team, right? That's never gonna happen.
Wait, someone's got to find out the answer to that question.
What do you mean? It's 500. They have a 500 record, and then after that, the tiebreaker is just
right now. Their record's 500.
So I don't get
if they were 0-0-16, they're 500.
I should get half a lock then.
I think it's safe to say
the
first winless team in the playoffs.
How would they be 500 if they have 16 ties?
That's just how it is. You have equal wins and losses.
Then I should get half a lock for.
This makes my
brain
hurt.
Maybe not.
Lock doesn't
maybe
work
I'm an
the
idiot.
Same way as a
maybe
spin.
I'm an idiot.
Of course it doesn't.
The Kansas City Chiefs. Head to Pittsburgh. Yes, the Steelers also 0-0-1. The Chiefs looked as dangerous as advertised against the Chargers, just lighting them up at the where did the Chargers play? What's the name of that place again?
The Chargers Stadium, the stuff.
Soccer field.
The big bell bottom.
Anyway, so here's a game, Greg Rosenthal, where the Steelers really want to just play better and play better at home. But Big Ben has an injury issue here, and when Big Ben's hurt, they're not the same team.
He hasn't practiced Wednesday or Thursday. His status seems up in the air, but it seems like one of those Ben Roethlisberger weeks where everyone fully expects him to play anyways, despite Josh Dobbs getting first-team snaps. It does, I think, worry you as a Steelers fan because this is – a sneaky good rivalry, I think,
sneaky
over
good.
The last few years. Played a couple times, including in the playoffs 2 years ago.
Sneaky good.
They've been back and forth, and I think it's a big game in the AFC. One of these, you know, teams we already talked about is 2-0 in the AFC North, and it's a tough matchup for a Steelers defense, I think, that has to be concerned in the secondary more than any place on their team. And if you have problems in the secondary, this Chiefs team is the type of team to expose it.
I'm not flat out calling Big Ben a drama queen. But he does have a long, storied history of playing up his injuries. In his defense, Randy Fitter, the offensive coordinator, said, I wouldn't be able to answer that at this point, whether he expects Big Ben to play. So Ben's not the only one playing up the injury this week.
It is a good rivalry, I guess, but Big Ben is 6-1 against the Chiefs. And they're the one team that it hasn't been a million matchups that have slowed down Tyreek Hill more than any other team in the league. This feels like a different Tyreek Hill to me, though, the way he's being used to Patrick Mahomes. I mean, if I were the Chiefs, the one thing I'd want to see is a little bit more out of Travis Kelce this week, because if you can have him going alongside Tyreek Hill, I mean, I think Pittsburgh, which down the stretch gave up some big passing plays against the Browns last week, hidden in a bunch of junk, they could be in trouble.
Wes, did you do any more journalistic deep diving on the background, how Player of the Week is chosen? Because I know if you saw Wednesday's show or listen to Wednesday's show, Wes on fire that Patrick Mahomes and not Tyreek Hill awarded Player of the Week.
I had no intention of ever doing any kind of journalistic.
Tyreek Hill was the best player on the field last week. I'm with you.
I sent one tweet to NFL PR guy, and I have not heard back.
It wasn't a good performance by the Chiefs defense overall, but they did get a big game out of Dee Ford, which they could really use, and Chris Jones as well last week. So like that, there's some little
in the secondary.
You're basically waving a stake in front of the ATN media insider saying, Dan, you go find that. Go get the answer.
Well, you are a journo, and Mark's an intrepid journo, and Greg, you know, he has done some journalism before. I don't think I've ever been a journalist.
Greg has done some journalism before.
He's hung out with journalists.
I don't think that the QB index is journalism.
No, none of it is. What are the rules?
An uncomfortable place.
What are the rules with
quite journalism.
What are the rules with lockups and like quarterback injuries and whatnot? Because if Ben's playing, and I'm fully expecting him to play, if Ben's playing, I think the Steelers rebound, and I'm going to lock that up. But it's a little unfair.
No, you got to hang with whatever happens.
If you lock up a team with a quarterback uncertainty, you got to kind of ride the lightning.
Yeah,
on that one.
I mean there are people tracking this, Greg. There's a Twitter account devoted to this.
Don't we know Big Ben's going to play?
I don't know.
He'll play. Whether he'll be effective will be another question. Let's move on. The Philadelphia Eagles.
That was locking it up, by the way, I guess.
We heard it. We got the
sound effect.
We got it. Yeah. We had the whole sound effect.
Making
said
sure.
It. Yeah.
You're good.
It's clear.
The Eagles, they played last Thursday, 18-12 win over the Falcons. Their defense did a good job stuffing Atlanta repeatedly inside their own 10-yard line, and the offense, I guess, did just enough. Now they travel to Tampa to face the Bucs, who we know all about it. Speaking of players of the week, Ryan Fitzpatrick, who went nuts in the 48-40 win against the Saints. We get to see what he can do against the Eagles. Mark, your thoughts?
So there are a few things that I hate more in football, Wes will agree, than the horrid sight of Tampa's overly lit, sun-blasted field on Game Pass. Hate
with
it.
Those uniforms as well?
One of the worst things around. That said, there are a few things I adore more than what the Bucks did last Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Blowing up an off-season of presumptions while ginger-bearded Ryan Fitzpatrick threw more touchdowns of 30-plus air yards against the Saints than Jameis Winston threw all last season. I can't wait to see what happens to the NFL community when they knock off the Eagles to start 2-0.
Ooh.
You going to lock this up?
No.
He's locking it up!
I'm not.
I really did
think about it. Sorry. Erica's like, after 14 days of listening to you all talk nonstop, you do this to me.
You know,
well, no, that I give you guys a lot of credit that you guys.
That we thought
that
about
you
it.
Both
Listen,
thought about it.
Like, Dan has compared us to, you know, incredible heroes that have fought for our country, and I think
comparison. It's different types of heroes.
Yeah, I was going to say that comparison would be way off, but,
yeah.
But
I'm just saying,
I,
like,
just
the great war heroes, just like we cannot understand what it would be like to be in battle. They don't understand. It was like 3 podcasts in 1 week.
It's a lot to deal with.
I think you guys are smart not to lock it up because the best group in this game is still the Eagles defense.
Well,
I know.
Hold on.
Yeah.
I wrote a C poem this week to the Bucs receiving core. Top 10 receiving cores, NFL.com/West.
Are they number one?
They are number two behind the Chiefs. But they are like the old Bill Walsh idea that your wide receivers should be like a basketball team. You don't want like 5 big, tall X receivers. They should complement each other. And the Bucs receivers complement each other as well as anyone.
So our tight ends are counted in this.
Tight ends and your receiving backs.
Watkins as your number one or two receiver.
He's not the number one. Tyreek Hill is one of the best receivers in the NFL. Don't give me that.
This
Travis Kelce is an all-pro tight end. They use Kareem Hunt very well. The Chiefs are there. The Bucs. The big winner of week one, Todd Monken, who took over play calling.
Monk!
And had a great game. You compared him to kind of like the Matt Nagy boost that the Chiefs got last year, Greg. You compared him to that in your debrief column. And this guy, like, if this keeps up, and that's a big if, people are going to be talking about him as a head coach.
It's already not too soon to worry that Nick Foles is just back to being bad Nick Foles. But now we'll get a good idea because the Bucs, they can't defend anybody, right?
Who's the bigger Jekyll and Hyde quarterback in this game?
That's a good question. But what we know is that Foles looked very bad, very bad in week one. And if he looks real bad in week two, I wonder how that meshes with the Eagles' decision about how much they're going to wait on Carson Wentz.
I don't know if that can affect anything to do with Wentz. I mean, the one thing about Foles,
you got a Super Bowl in your pocket, and you're thinking long term.
Just saying, these guys are very competitive, winning and losing, stress, pressure. We'll see what happens. They need him to play better.
Well, this isn't the Falcons' defense, so I would assume we would get the better Nick Foles. If we don't, time to be concerned.
Let's move on. The Houston Texans, they could not hang with the Patriots in week one. Well, I guess they hung with them, but they just never really came close to getting over the hump. Now they travel to Tennessee to face the Titans, who fell in Miami in week one. Here's a game, Chris Wessling, where Deshaun Watson is going to be looking to shake off the rust because there was a lot of it in week one.
Yeah, Tony Romo was killing him for his pre-snap decisions in the second half of that game, especially down the stretch, which isn't surprising. He's, got like 5 starts under his belt in the NFL, so it's not
going up against Bill Belichick, who had an offseason to prepare for it, too.
But from the Titans' point of view, I try not to take any grand sweeping conclusions out of a game that was the longest in NFL history and the hottest game the Titans have played this century.
Hmm.
There were some mitigating factors there, but Mariota was terrible before the injury.
I was going to say, I did not, and I think this is a 1-game sample. When Blaine Gabbert came in, and Blaine Gabbert's Blaine Gabbert, I did not see a major drop-off in that one game from Mariota to Blaine Gabbert. The one thing I really like about this year's Titans is versus the Derrick Henry, DeMarco Murray pair, the Derrick Henry, Deion Lewis pair works for me. I think this is a good – they have a good situation on the ground. And the Titans offense – part of Mariota's issues, he's had, what, 5 coaches in 4 years or something like 4 and 5, and they've had such low wattage skill position players. You see little moments from Corey Davis. You see little moments here and there, and I think they could develop into something better down the stretch. I might be the only person in the country that also likes their new uniforms.
I like them, too.
They're horrible.
I like the home ones. I don't love the road ones. We'll see the home ones.
Yeah, I like the home ones better.
And all the Titans fans are going to get mad because I say Titans and stuff, and you think I'm just piling on. I legitimately – think they look like CFL uniforms, but that's just my opinion.
Their home uniforms look like a throwback to like the 1930s.
I think they're cool. I like
a mix of modern. I like it.
Greg, what did you see from J.J. Watt in week one?
Yeah, I think he played pretty well in the second half of that game.
Well, yeah, second half. I looked up in the third quarter and I was like, oh, J.J. Watt's out there. And then he was there for the rest of the game.
Right. And he talked about that during the week, too, that he felt like it almost took him a while to even get back to feeling, but then feeling like who he was again as a player. And then he was creating a lot of pressure. I think if you're a Texans fan, you have to be excited. They're the healthier team here. Taylor Lewan is hurt. Mariota's playing, but he's not looking right. And it's not just one game because he did not look right in the preseason either. Rashawn Evans, like, they have a lot of injuries on that Titans team.
You know what else went well for the Texans? Kareem Jackson moving to safety had a great game.
A fun little nug from our beautiful week 2 research notes. Jeff Greenholtz and everybody does a great job downstairs. On game day, it will be 728 days since J.J. Watt's last sack. Wow. Good luck, J.J. Watt. Let's stack some quarterback takedowns. Wow. Let's take a brief pause here to throw it to the Quiet Storm.
In 1959, the United States Army took on a covert project to construct Camp Century, a military scientific research base nestled below the icy depths of Greenland, then a county of Denmark. Falling under the top secret umbrella of Project Iceworm, the complex was to serve as a launch site for nuclear missiles within an arm's reach of Soviet Russia. 8 meters below the ice, Camp Century came laced with a network of 21 tunnels running more than 3,000 meters in length. The secret base housed laboratories, a shop, a hospital, a cinema, a chapel, and accommodation for as many as 200 soldiers. The operation was so off the radar that Danish government officials were unaware of its existence. The whole thing went south, though, when military brass jumped ship on Project Iceworm after realizing the constantly moving ice was too unstable and would potentially deform and perhaps even collapse the tunnels below. But sure, let's go back to discussing a sport where men run around in tights, white pants, and grabbing at each other while doing hopscotch in the end zone. F***ed up the end of that read. Should I read that last sentence again?
What?
Wait, are you talking about? What about... What about Mr. Flame's economics class?
That's not a Mr. Flame read.
No, I know.
Let me read that last sentence, though.
We're leaving all of this in, though.
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, last sentence.
All right, sure. But sure, let's go back to discussing a sport where men run around in tights and gab at each other while doing hopscotch in the end zone. I don't know what that last sentence means.
My favorite. Can we clip you?
That's a
saying,
real thing, by the way.
Can we clip Tamposi saying, what are you even talking about? I feel like that would be a good sound drop in general.
That would be a great sound drop.
Moving right along, the Indianapolis Colts are 0-1 after a 34-23 loss to the Bengals in week one, and now they travel to Washington to face the Redskins, who looked mighty nice, Greg Rosenthal, against the Cards in week one. No road team really was in more control outside maybe the Jets in week one than the Redskins.
They looked awesome, and if we hadn't already chosen the Bears of the team – of ATL, I think I would be I would be promoting the Redskins as a possibility. Long a team that I've basically rooted against year after
reviled
year.
Reviled by you.
Yeah, basically the one team I pretty much admit I'm just biased. I'm rooting against you. Don't like the operation. But this year they just feel different. And I throughout the offseason, defensively, but especially offensively, I think they're going to be really fun to watch. And I really do believe that it's going to be them and the Eagles for the NFC East. And I think the Redskins can be a playoff team.
I'm with you. I think everyone kind of slept on the Redskins in the offseason just because the Cowboys and the Eagles and the Giants had maybe more sexy storylines around them. But they look so good in week one. And that division, it figures to be, I don't know if there's a dominant team in that division. Why can't it be the Redskins?
I think it's hard to sign up for them because for me, and I know a little bit of Wes as well, all of us have sort of fallen for them for periods. And then they just disappoint you while other more established teams get the job done. But to me, it's about fit because we know about Adrian Peterson. Wes has been talking about him for weeks. But Chris Thompson, and you get Alex Smith. The way these three pieces fit together with Jordan Reed on the outside too, this offense to me is one – they dominated Arizona. They just had their way. And the way that they went down the field in the two-minute warning before halftime to get it to 21 points versus 14 or nothing or 17, that to me was Alex Smith playing at the top of his game and directing that offense in a way where he's completely at home, and the Redskins would have been a completely good team of ATL pick had it not been the Bears.
Chris Thompson said he's not going to be healthy till November after that devastating leg injury. He looks so explosive.
If he's not healthy, what are we? I mean, like, he looked faster than, like, 18 other human beings I've ever seen in my life.
Their linebackers in front seven looked really good. Their linebackers are so underrated.
Yeah, and Jonathan Allen looks awesome. And you mentioned the fit for Alex Smith. It's like the fit of Jay Gruden and Alex Smith, to me, is the most important fit. And for whatever reason, Jay Gruden never seemed to really wrap his arms around Kirk Cousins.
Stop.
This is
revisionist history.
It's just,
total revisionist
history. It's just true.
History.
And it's the type
for
of...
For three straight years, he said...
We're going in the lab.
Kirk Cousins is the kind of quarterback you build a franchise around. Consistently said that.
While burying him off the record, that's not hard to read between the lines.
Stop.
Of the reporters.
Stop. This is totally wrong. It's
I hate
false.
To see this, Mark.
It's false. It's not correct. He stood behind Kirk Cousins 100% until the day he found out Kirk Cousins wasn't going to be there anymore. And then he turned on him. But Jay Gruden, every time, went to the mat for Kirk Cousins.
While burying him behind the scenes.
It's
and not
just
giving
not
him a
true.
Contract.
It's just not
I
true.
I had almost three times taken a karate chop to the head from West.
All I'm saying is this is Jay Gruden's organization. I would put him in the top three or four in terms of head coaching power. Whatever happens in this organization is what Jay Gruden wants to happen. And he got this Alex Smith trade done. He said goodbye to Kirk Cousins. It was a financial thing, obviously, too. And all I'm saying is he's really excited to have Alex Smith, and it might be a better fit.
I'll tell you one good fit.
Yeah.
Me and this team, the Redskins, locking it up.
I like it.
I got to win this one.
Well, yes. Mark and I fell in week one in the locks. Wes and Greg 1-0. So we're one game back. It's a lot of ball game.
I mean, I can go pull like a dozen quotes, Greg. A dozen, at least. And they are more glowing than any coach talking about any quarterback. What are these reports you're talking
about? And the Grudens are well known for being totally trustworthy.
I've never seen any reports that, like, the John Gruden or Jay Gruden doesn't trust Kirk Cousins.
Gruden did.
Bruce Allen, maybe.
Gruden did cut against the grain to put Kirk Cousins in over RG3.
Yeah.
When that was not popular with a lot of fans and stuff. I thought that – I mean, that's – support.
Some people say when two people that you know are kind of going at it, ooh, I'm uncomfortable. I'm like really comfortable when Wes and Greg start going at it. It's like I'm in like,
really
like a warm like wool sweater
on
a brisk New England like November morning.
Nice little crisp fire.
Dust off a little dew.
What?
All right, moving on. The Cardinals, they were defeated by the Redskins in week one, and their reward for a tepid showing at home to start the season is a trip to Los Angeles to face the Rams, who whooped up on the Raiders. And we didn't really get a chance to talk about the late Monday night game on Wednesday's show. So before we get into this matchup, Mark Sessler, I was curious your thoughts about what the Rams did, specifically in the second half where they really just turned it on.
Well, that to me was an example of – because the Raiders surprised me to hang around the way they did as long as they did.
They're
in that
winning
game.
At halftime.
Right. But the Rams, you have to go toe-to-toe the entire way because they have too many people that can wear you down. It's their defensive line. It's Todd Gurley. It's the way that they use Jared Goff and his wide receivers. You got to be on top of it play after play. And as soon as the Raiders started to show any cracks, this is what the Rams did last year. And this is what I think they'll do against the Cardinals again. You might keep them quiet for a quarter or two, but then they'll have that quarter where they drop 17, 20 points on you, and there's no way to catch up. And the Rams, to me, because I had questions about continuity. Are we going to see what we saw last year and an improvement? I think Jared Goff is noticeably more comfortable. And some of the stuff where they had to coach him before the snap, they said he's doing some of that just simply on his own now. He's an extension of the coaching staff. And this Rams team does not look any less powerful on offense. And the Cardinals, who laid a total egg last week, how do you climb out of that with the offense they showed?
The Cardinals aren't good.
No.
And Bradford played bad, but their offensive line and their wide receivers were even worse. This is to me, this looks like a total rebuild year, and I had higher expectations than that for them.
I mean, non-Larry Fitzgerald receivers, wideouts, had a total of 4 yards in that game. I mean, that's a problem. And I also think that Aaron Donald and the Rams as a whole have showed the preseason and maybe even training camp a little bit to be a little bit overrated. If you were doing a little winners and losers, it's like training camp in the preseason are wildly overrated. If Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack and all the guys that essentially –
it's overrated for the best players in the NFL.
Sure, but they showed up 5 or 6 days ahead of time and they play 65 snaps. And by the way, Aaron Donald was awesome in that game.
Don't you think they're the exception to the rule because they're just that good? If you have Sean McVay and Aaron Donald, you can get away with it.
Okay, they also – the Rams skipped it. I just think the fact that any of these players can show up after missing that much work – Earl Thomas was another one, and they just were outstanding right away. I don't know.
It's star veterans.
Aureo Magnifico for the NFL?
I don't know if it is for the whole league, though. It's star players who know the playbook because these used to be like, oh, you're working a meat packing plant, and now you got to come to camp and get in shape. It's like these guys are in optimum shape.
Right.
But for 80% of the players who are trying to get on the roster and trying to keep roster spots, I think it's more important.
And it's a separate issue, but the Rams offense sitting out the preseason didn't hurt them either.
And I know, I get it, by the way. You paid Sam Bradford $20 million, but get Josh Rosen on that field.
I don't.
You're a team for the future. You're building for the future.
It's going to happen soon, probably, just because they're not very good, but that's not a they're not setting up Rosen for success either.
I know that, but at a certain point, Sam Bradford is one of the last guys in the whole league that I would pick to be shepherding a team that is so clearly not ready for the now. Bradford, I don't know where Bradford fits in. Maybe like the Vikings last year if he could have stayed healthy, but I don't see what they're gaining from him. He's a progress stopper, Wes. That's what he is.
I agree. When you look at this team, it's like, why even bother throwing Sam Bradford out with that offense?
And we were told all through the pre-draft process that Rosen was the most pro-ready guy. I'm just saying. I'm sure it will work itself out in a couple weeks.
Ram, so what do you think? By October?
I'm going to say week four. I'd be surprised if he's not starting by week four.
That wouldn't surprise me.
This would be their first Rams 2-0 start, I think, since the early 90s.
If they win.
If they win. And you do kind of look at the NFC in general and this division. I don't think it's a great NFC West, and I do think the Rams are obviously a Super Bowl or bust type of team. And I think they're a team that's in a good position to get a bye.
Ooh, I thought you were going to go all the way and say they were in a position to maybe.
No, I'm just saying
16-0.
It's not a bad schedule that the Rams have.
I have no worry about them whatsoever, just because Sean McVay is that good.
All right, moving on. The Detroit Lions, no one looked worse in their own building than the Lions in week one. They were completely outclassed by the Jets in a 48-17 loss. And now they travel to San Francisco to face the 49ers. Wes, even before that Lions game on Monday night, I thought that there was a potential situation of Detroit going into a buzzsaw with Kyle Shanahan and Garoppolo getting out of Minnesota and getting healthy. I feel that I'm more strongly – my feeling about that is more strong than ever after what I saw on Monday night. What do you think?
I agree, and it's the other side of the ball that I was going to concentrate on, that the 49ers defense, even in a loss, looked really good.
Mm.
And where is this Lions running game we heard about all August, all offseason, that they have fixed their running game finally? They got the offensive line. They've got the running backs. This 49ers team held Dalvin Cook under 50 yards rushing. And then you're coming into San Francisco – with your veterans complaining about a coach. And I don't know if Matt Patricia will ever be a good coach. I don't know if he's a good coach now. But I do know these Lions veterans have accomplished nothing. Hmm. So why should I believe they know how to win?
Who are these veterans we speak of?
I've thought about
it. I don't know.
Like a Golden Tate?
Glover Quinn is not playing as much. He's been probably their best player on defense. He's about as respected as anyone. I'm not going to guess who's talking about it.
That'd be an awesome headline.
Yes.
But they might be.
Yes.
I was really interested to see that he wasn't playing as much, and there's some talk that he might even not even be starting. I was like, wow, Glover Quinn's kind of been amazing. So that's
he's like a veteran leader.
That's
Pro
a veteran
kind
leader.
Of guy.
Right. But he doesn't fit, apparently.
Any other thoughts about this game, gentlemen?
Any concerns at all about Jimmy G after that game? A couple bad decisions, couple great throws. I think this is one of the best matchups you can possibly have is the Detroit Lions defense right now. They've shown that in the preseason and then in week one.
I almost feel like
Jimmy
G, too, with the way he finished last year. And it was bound to – there's going to be all these questions when he has what is an expectedly down-to-earth performance here and there, like, oh, you know, are we jumping ship on Jimmy G? It's like, he's going to be fine. And every game he makes a throw or two, you're like, wow.
My advice to Matt Patricia is, after seeing him on the sideline, like about 400 shots from ESPN, breathe, big fella.
Well,
maybe talk to some of the other your coaches on the sideline. Try to enjoy yourself, because he did not look like a guy that was having any fun in week one.
Art Shell used to get nailed for that, for just sort of 1,000-yard stare for like 15 straight minutes, where it's like, excuse me, sir, can we just get you back registered?
That's going way back.
Marquise Goodwin, he's not certain to play in this game. Probably sounds like he's not. And Dante Pettis might end up being like the number one receiver on this team for this week or while Goodwin is gone, which is wild.
Look good in week one.
Look great.
All right, moving on. The Oakland Raiders, who were outclassed in the second half of Monday Night Football against the Rams in the black hole. Now they travel to Denver to face the Broncos. Greg, I'm going to set you up on this. Now, the Broncos, and Wes, I, on your advice, because you're talking them up so much, I watched the Broncos this morning, and I totally agree. I think that was, to me, the best game of week one.
It was just
a fun back-and-forth game.
Isn't Philip Lindsay fun to watch?
Philip Lindsay is very fun to watch. And Von Miller, when he just stole that, like, a loaf of bread, he was awesome in the game.
Emmanuel Sanders, please.
But that said, what I was saying on Wednesday.
Matt LaCrosse. That guy was great.
What I was saying before I watched the game, I feel the same and even more so. That our boy Case Keenum, he could have thrown five or six interceptions in that game. He got hit with three, but he could have easily thrown at least five. So, Greg, I'll start there. They really looked much, much better on offense. But did Keenum terrify you at all watching him against the Seahawks? Because he was pretty loose with the football.
He was loose. He's going to be a little scary, but I kind of think that's what they're going to just have to be. And because I don't think this is going to be a great defense. They had some major meltdowns in the secondary. And so I think if the Raiders are going to throw vertical, like, this is a week to do it. There was some miscommunication. That was a pretty dominant performance. It should not have been 27-24. They doubled them up in terms of first downs. And so Keenum kind of kept the Seahawks in the game. I don't know. Should the Broncos be heavy favorites in this game? Are we already at the point where we're trusting them to win? I guess I'm not quite there yet.
They should be favorites to the extent that
what?
I'm locking them up.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
Broncos are my team this year.
I mean, I'm not surprised.
The Bears are my team, of course. You know, loyal to the team of ATL, but yeah,
not surprising.
We each already have, like, second team of ATLs stacked behind the Bears.
The Bears got to show us something in week two. That goes without saying. The Raiders, meanwhile, we'll give them a little – love is a strong word. But how did you evaluate their performance, Wes, on Monday night?
They stink. Derek Carr played really well in the first half when John Gruden was scripting the plays. And then the second half, the knock on him, even before he entered the league, is he doesn't handle pressure well, and he didn't handle pressure well.
And you've got Gruden in the days following coming out and essentially sort of calling out Derek Carr for not seeing Amari Cooper downfield to the press. Why do that? Although we know that that's a tick of Gruden's in the past.
I think he's just loose. You know what I mean? I just think he was saying what he thinks.
Yeah, I agree.
And that sometimes he just gets loose and he ends up throwing players under the bus a little bit. In Carr's defense, it was not a good performance by their offensive line. And that was the thing that stood out about the Raiders 2 years ago.
Those throws he just threw up for grabs.
Right.
There's no defense for that.
Right, but Colton Miller had a bad game. Osemele got worked. Everyone gets worked against Aaron Donald. But Donald Penn's on a different side. And that was the strength of the team. He was protected better than any quarterback in the league 2 years ago, and that doesn't seem to be the case, and that's going to be a problem.
Shout out to Leon Hall, written off by about eight different teams, 30-something years old, and looked like their best defensive player in that game.
Let's move on. The New England Patriots, life still good on the throne of ease. They took care of business at home against the Texans. All of a sudden, Erica plugs in. She's paying attention now. Good for her.
Are we going to win?
Is it the same watching the Pats now that your beloved Danny Amendola is playing in South Beach?
No.
I was going to say,
No, it is.
It's the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Who's your new Danny?
There isn't it. I mean, Edelman's suspended, so like this, I'm just sort of cruising till week four, five, essentially.
Yeah. You like those bad boys.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, the Pats 1-0, they now travel to Jacksonville. This is a great, great game. I hazard to guess, but It has to be the Phil Simms Jim Nantz special. Pats Jags rematch of the AFC Championship game, Mark, that the Jags let slip away. Woo, this is a good one.
Breaking news, Phil Simms back in the booth.
Is he? I didn't even know Dan said that. Dan must have said Phil Simms.
I said Simms?
Yeah, I believe we still have
Romo. Simms and Romo are at the same level of greatness, so sometimes Tony Romo and Jim Nantz.
They're actually bringing Simms back for Bengals-Browns week 12.
Good. Good. Well, good for Phil.
That's Beasley Reese's game.
Where is Phil these days, by the way? Is he on Inside the NFL on HBO?
Yeah, and he's on their pregame. He's on CBS's pregame show.
Phil's okay.
Don't cry for Phil Simms.
It's called a reassignment. They move you to a different part of the media limb.
Phil's okay. Phil's got a couple of rings.
It's coming for all of us. Though.
Right. It's coming for us. We're going to be doing like the – I don't know. How could we get demoted? I was trying to drive time.
Yeah, Sheboygan.
I was trying to think of like what do they think less of than podcasts, but they don't. So
in this company, I don't think there is a demotion we can get in terms of speaking.
I could think of a few.
Maybe like we're just like we're in that social blue room. You know, like all the young NFL workers are in one room where their king Bryce Gustafson
Those
sits in the middle on a magical couch.
I know we'll be producing the broadcast. We'll be behind the glass with only one person allowed to speak, and they can
At
choose
once.
Who.
All right, here we go, Mark.
Anyway,
I'll set you up. Tom Brady and Rob Gronkowski versus Jalen Ramsey and the Jaguars defense. Yummy.
I think we were talking downstairs the other day or in some room that this feels a lot to me like hearkening back to the 2003-2004 Patriots.
Yeah, suddenly, I disagree. I don't think it's like that.
All right.
Why
don't you explain your comment?
No,
I just think it is. I think you look at like Trey Flowers and Juwan Bentley and Dietrich Wise Jr., and then you have an offense where you've got Cordarrelle Patterson and Philip Dorsett catching the ball from Tom Brady, who looks like he's in about 2004 shape right now. He looked completely young to me all over again.
He's better than he was.
This is an interesting team. I think the Patriots, again, anyone that wanted to predict their demise, which I believe I had a sandwich that they would not make the playoffs. Well, I'm going to lose that. They're going to make it, and they're going to be about 13-3.
So one gradually greater. The guy just gets better. It's amazing. I think when he goes into Canton, like his biggest attribute is going to be staying power. He's just always there. Every September, every January, every February, he's always there, and he's always better than he was the previous year.
Well, yeah, I wasn't being flip saying he's better than 2004. There's no question he's better than he was. His best two-year stretch in the NFL is the last 2 years. Like I don't even think it's
amazing.
That debatable. And he had a great week one. That said, this is as tough of a matchup as possible. I'm not ready to just
How will they summon the power?
Well, they are
to
playing
this week,
the
Greg.
Best defense in the league.
Oh,
and the best defense in the league showed up in week one and looked exactly like you would expect it. It confirmed that, hey, this is going to be Miles Jack's kind of breakout year. And, hey, they're about as deep on the defensive line as any team in the NFL. You have to admit it.
So, like a 1 in 30 chance they have to win on Sunday, the Pats?
It's a coin flip game, according to the
50-50.
People of the desert. I mean,
it should
this
be
isn't
a coin flip.
This
no, I think it's a coin flip game. I agree. Okay.
Jacksonville wants it. I mean, this is the AFC
Look at this.
Rematch.
No, she's plugged in. This
no,
is the Patriots.
No, they're going to come back. They want to try to prove
something. They should have won that
something.
Game.
They were up 10 in the fourth quarter
exactly.
with the best defense in the league.
One of these teams is much better than they were in January. And it's the Patriots.
Exactly.
Because
our defense looks better.
Tony Romo said that Bill Belichick is super excited for this defense. They are much better pass rushing. Like, this is a better defense.
Here's the thing, though. Are they going to be – I don't think they're going to be as good right now as they are at the end of the year offensively. I'm not ready to say, okay, they have a great – they have the best quarterback and the best tight end, but it might be a pretty uneven offense
They've
in
got
September.
Some...
And so if the Jaguars shut them down pretty well and it's 13-10 in the fourth quarter, I don't think that should be a shock to anyone.
I agree.
Was Leonard Fournette playing in this game?
Game time decision.
We don't know.
Enough with the game time decision, that guy, and will his hamstring hold up, and is that, you know – my God.
Both backfields are in trouble.
How frustrating that must be.
Yeah, Rex Burkhead is coming off of a concussion. He was at practice Thursday, so we'll have to see.
Extremely limited.
So Jeremy Hill out for the season.
And the Jaguars' offense, not that I expected them to look way different, you know, this season, but I think that was a pretty discouraging performance in New York. They didn't score a point in the second half. The offense only scored 13 points overall. I think T.J. Yeldon looks pretty good, but it's not like you saw Blake Bortles come out in this game and you're like, okay, this guy's maturing. It was a pretty poor Blake Bortles game against not a great defense.
I got the Jags getting some revenge in this game. You guys got the Pats or?
I'm country.
I've got the Patriots.
The Patriots, yes.
Pretty convincingly.
I don't pick against the Patriots in big games.
I famously picked them against, not famously.
It's not a big
Nobody
game.
Knows.
It's a big game.
In the AFC Championship. The Jaguars.
It's really not.
It's the biggest game of the week,
isn't it?
Tired
of losing this crap.
It is.
That's a big game.
That's true.
All right. Sunday night football. Oh, yeah. You boys love this Sunday night matchup.
Speaking of big games.
The G-Man coming off that disappointing.
That the Giants and Cowboys are on Sunday night football.
Ratings, baby. That's why it happened.
0-1 versus 0-1.
They moved the needle. A 2015 loss to the Jags in week one did not look very good on offense, but it is the Jags. Great defense. They now travel to Jerry World. And the Cowboys have a whole mess of problems, Chris Wessling. And surprisingly, the offensive line is now a liability, or that's how it looked in week one.
I never thought I would have said this a month ago or 2 weeks ago, but it's a big problem when the Cowboys' offense is worse than their defense.
Yes.
And it could be a season-long issue.
What's the problem? What's wrong with
this team?
I think
it's wide receiver to start with.
The offensive line got outplayed by the Panthers' defensive line, and they're supposed to be the best offensive line around. That's a big problem.
They're not when they don't have Travis Fedrick.
Right, they didn't know that was going to happen.
When's the last time Dak Prescott's played a good game?
About 10 games ago.
He hasn't been able to kind of rise above what's happening, and I think probably his best skill is those off-schedule plays down the field. Like, he is one of the best deep ball throwers kind of on the move. It's like, who's catching that pass? He's not even really trying those passes right now, but who would be catching that pass on this team?
Michael Gallup?
They don't have the person.
Bill Barnwell at ESPN wrote a good piece kind of digging
Barney!
Into
Barney!
No one called
Billy!
Nobody.
Billy!
Digging into the Cowboys, who have the biggest competitive advantage in the sport right now because they have – even if he hasn't played well maybe in recent times. But Dak Prescott is the biggest bargain because he was a fourth-round pick, and he basically makes no money. I think he's owed maybe $2.7 million over the balance of his contract. And during the last two off seasons, the Cowboys have not really went after any big free agents. And part of the reason why they haven't is because they've made so many bad deals and have so much dead cap money, and they have not handled their business affairs correctly.
Dez and Tony Romo being the two biggest issues.
Right. But there are a whole host of other guys that you completely forget that they've just been killing themselves with now for years, and that's kind of put them in this situation. You wonder, why didn't they go out and get some more free agents while they're a little bit hamstrung? And you're seeing it all, the what do they call it, the chickens come home to roost? Is that a term?
I think
yeah, that's right.
That's what's happening here.
I'm so proud of you.
Yeah,
where are they going? They're typically penned in on a farm.
They're coming home.
No, and they're going to go roost.
And this might be a lost season because of their bad business practices and their inability to surround a young quarterback that's very cheap with real talent. Yikes.
It's one week.
Yes, Ben.
It's 1 week. You have this would be part of the show.
That was actually a little throwback podcast.
That actually sounded
pop there.
Yeah, that was good. Right,
that was
that's
good.
What I have a small stable of impressions, and the bare naked ladies guy saying "Yes, Ben" is one of them.
It's shocking. Hard that to has, come back hasn't that. come out more.
Save it for the other show. You know, you have to keep these.
I
want to
hear
separate.
It more often.
Yeah,
that was good.
All right, check out the throwback podcast.
Randy Gregory suffered a concussion in week one, and I thought he was going to make a big difference. There's a report that he's going to have another suspension eventually anyways, but he's not. It sounds like he is not going to play this game. DeMarcus Lawrence is, and his absence makes it even less likely that the defense ends up being a difference maker. Jalen Smith played the whole game last week. Wouldn't say he made like a huge impact. They have some good pieces in the secondary. I don't know like how good is the Giants offense going to be, and how much of it was just the Jack playing against Jacksonville?
We'll get a good idea.
Eli didn't
think
look bad,
Sunday.
I didn't think. I think Eli's had worse games, put it that way.
He didn't look bad, but there's still a
certainly
still
had
like
worse games.
In an alternate universe.
It wasn't. I like looked at the box score, and I was thinking this is going to be a bad Eli game, and he wasn't their number one problem.
In an alternate universe, though, the Giants have Sam Darnold and Adrian Peterson right now, and they have a lot of hope.
It's true.
That would have been interesting.
I mean, you can't really tag them with Peterson. Everybody passed on him.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, Peterson.
They would have needed a running back. They would have been a candidate to get
one. So it would be Sam Darnold and Jonathan Stewart.
Sure. I'm just saying they could have had the quarterback and they passed. It's
Or if they took, you know.
I love Saquon Barkley. I get it. But
if they took Todd Gurley over Eric Flowers.
Right.
Isn't it a little bit early to say that Darnold was a better pick than Saquon?
It is.
I think it's very early, but
it's way too early.
I still, it is. Honestly,
there's a headline
I cannot
in the Big
believe.
Lead this week that was like, how much are the Browns and the Giants regretting passing on Sam?
Right.
Oh, I was like, that's the worst headline I've ever seen. But with the Giants,
no,
I think there's something to it. That if Sam Darnold, if we're halfway through the season and he just looks like a
franchise quarterback.
It's
just that the Giants passed on the quarterback. The Browns did not, neither the Cardinals or the Bills.
Last game of the week, Monday Night Football, the Seattle Seahawks, who, as
we
said earlier.
What do we like in that Cowboys game? I'm going to throw that out to everyone.
Okay,
sorry.
Go ahead. Don't apologize.
I think the Cowboys find a way. They're not going to be as bad as
I think the Giants are a considerably better team.
I think the G-men are going to take care of business.
Defense played pretty well, the Giants.
I think the G-men will roll. I think the Cowboys are working through some stuff now.
If they get Travis Frederick back at some time, and that's a huge if, I have no idea, that could help. But I think the Cowboys are lost right now.
All right, the Seahawks, they played a very entertaining game, as we said, against the Broncos. Fell short, 27-24. They head to Chicago to face the Bears. And, Greg, we should touch on the Bears because we haven't had a chance to talk about what happened to them on Sunday night. The highs were so high at Lambeau Field, and then the lows were absolutely crushing. I know, you know, a loss in week one probably shouldn't dictate how the rest of your season unfolds. But I'm wondering what the confidence level of that team is after what Aaron Rodgers did to them.
I've seen a lot of that this loss was somehow a good sign for the Bears, you know, the way that they played, the way that Khalil Mack came out. But I'm more with you, Dan, that was a massive missed opportunity. And the number one question about this Bears team created more questions after this game. It was not a good performance by Mitchell Trubisky, especially after you got through those scripted plays early. He struggled in the second half, and I think that's a concern. That was a major missed opportunity by them. Like it should. You're not getting any extra credit that you played this rival team tough. You got to finish out
the
game.
I had two takeaways from the end of that game. One, I can't. There was a reality where it should have played out this way for the Bears that Aaron Rodgers never gets back on the field. They have 3rd and 1 inside the 20 where they end up settling for a field goal. They throw the ball, and they throw an incomplete pass. You run the ball once, and my Bears colleague downstairs, Ali, made a good point too. Maybe you get two cracks at it because kick the field goal, you send Aaron Rodgers back on the field down 6. It was set in stone, it felt like, almost, what was going to happen next. So that was my one thought. And then my other thought was, after Rodgers does the Rodgers thing, and thank you, by the way, Packers fans are sending gift baskets to Kyle Fuller because he should have ended the game as well with an interception.
Good
but
point.
After they take the lead, the Packers, the Bears come out on the field, and I just got the feeling that Mitch Trubisky, the way he looked, he just wasn't ready for that moment. And I think he played that way. He looked a little tight. And, I obviously there's questions that to be asked about Trubisky at this stage.
I think we're still waiting for that game, even that half, where Trubisky does enough to convince us that, yes, this is the guy in Chicago. The search for a quarterback is absolutely over. I mean, it's over now for a while because they're going to work with him as much as they can. But the light has not gone on the same way you've seen with some other quarterbacks in the 17 games in.
That's fair.
Bill Simmons used to call it stomach punch level loss, one of the worst loss level. When you factor in the 3rd and 1, the comeback, the 3rd and 1, the Kyle Fuller drop, the Randall Cobb interception, and then that having one more chance, the Clay Matthews roughing the passer, giving you new life and still falling short, that is about as bad as a regular season loss can be in week 1.
And factor in, if you're a Bears fan, that all you've done in the past decade is getting whipped by Aaron Rodgers and the Packers over and over.
Right.
There was that. It was the opponent, too.
This is a great matchup to bounce back from, bounce back on. You're back home. You're facing a Seattle team that, to me, has all sorts of problems. Russell Wilson had a poor game for him, missed some throws, made a bad interception, ran into some sacks. He admitted 3 of the sacks were on him. And you're counting on Brandon Marshall to win on the outside.
Yeah.
You know, you're throwing late passes to Jerron Brown down the field. Rashad Penny was basically dismissed almost by Pete Carroll during the press conference this week, essentially saying, like, this kid wasn't ready. We need to rely on Chris Carson a little more. Chris Carson looked good. It's a lot going on, and you're not exactly sure who on defense other than Earl Thomas and Frank Clark are really going to carry the day.
I feel like Seattle, like, you've finally, after all these years done at Seattle, you've created an offense with no identity at all. other than Russell Wilson having to run around, do figure eights, get sacked 20 yards.
Doug Baldwin being banged up is a big issue.
It's
for
the killer. Yeah, but even with him in there, what is this offense right now?
It would help a lot.
This
would help a lot.
This looks damn good.
That identity goes to the defense, too. What's the defense right now?
You stripped away all these people, and it's like it's a nice fresh start. But really, you have nothing to really hang your hat on.
If you're the Bears, you are attacking Trey Flowers and Shaquille Griffin, rather, who had a solid rookie year, but they were overmatched last week against the Broncos. I know that's a good pair of receivers, but they were just people were wide open against that cornerback group. And so you would think Matt Nagy can cook up some plays here for his wide receivers, who other than Allen Robinson didn't really do a lot last week.
I'm taking the team of ATL on this one.
Me too.
You gotta ride with them here. Let's go, boys. Bounce back. All right. Next time you hear from us, it will be Sunday night, the flagship show where we recap all of these games that we just previewed. So make sure you check in with that. And our Twitter show premieres on Tuesday. And this is fun. We're going to part of the show, and it makes sense. It's on Twitter. There will be a social integration aspect to it, a way for the viewers of the show to interact with us. So if you have any questions, comments, if you want to send in videos, if you want to do anything within the bounds of the law. Yeah, I mean, you don't break the law, or at least don't get caught. Hit us up.
American law.
Yeah. Hit us up on Twitter, any of our handles around the NFL or each of ours, but make sure you use the hashtag.
Around the NFL.
Around the NFL. Use that hashtag.
They even said use a capital letter for in NFL. And but I don't really know. I think it'll still get through.
It will still – well, listen, in these shadowy league figures went out of their way to say we know that the listeners of this show particularly are different than NFL Network viewers, different than any other thing. It's a smarter group. It flat out, that's what they said. It's a smarter group.
Yeah.
They essentially – yeah.
Right? They said this is the group we need to chime in and bring your goods. So, you know, please do not sleep through the day.
They basically said anyone who watches NFL Network and responds is a bunch of mouth breathers. But our podcast listeners are just
geniuses. Bunch of Einsteins.
Yeah, like just, you know, just beautiful people.
Hit us up because watch the show because it's a big thing for us and we promise to make it different and cool. Okay, let's go. This is Dan Hansen signing off for Quiet Storm, the mailman. Judgmental Greg. Remember that?
No, that's not a nickname.
When was this? Oh, yeah, last show.
In a loose cannon. Till Sunday night. Isn't it easy just to throw it on?
Yeah, post? Super easy. Everything you want is easy.